Sacramento author Kiyo Sato wrote the story of her family's search for the American dream in the memoir Dandelion Through the Crack. She's about to be honored for that work. The Sacramento County Historical Society will give Sato one of its annual awards of excellence later this month. And she's been invited to speak at this year's Sacramento International Film Festival, also later this month. The festival is showing a film called Passing Poston, about the internment camp in Arizona where Sato and her family spent much of the war. She's featured in the film and will answer questions about it after the screening. We spoke with Kiyo Sato last year on Insight, around the time Dandelion Through the Crack was published, and I asked her what the title means.
That comes from my father's haiku. My father was not only a farmer, but also a poet. And dandelion is stepped on continuously, but it manages to bloom in the end. And that's the feeling that I want every reader to get, that we all bloom at the very end.
That even though we're a humble flower poking through
right,
the crack in the sidewalk.
Even though we go through so many kinds of experiences in life.
You said your father wrote haiku.
Yes.
Was that important to him?
Oh, that was... I suppose that was almost his way of living. The haiku in 575 syllables delve deep into nature. And he was a true man of nature, I'd say, you know.
He was a farmer.
And loved his farming until the very end, until he was 87.
When would he write his haiku? Would he write his haiku in his head when he was working in the farm? Or was that something he would go home and sit at his desk and compose?
At night. I suppose he was thinking it all the time. You know, I'd see him even at night going outside and looking at the umenoki, which is a flowering plum that blooms in the snow in Japan that he managed to graft on a tree here, you know, and he'd be out there for hours sometimes just gazing at that tree.
You start each of the chapters in your book with a haiku from your father.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How many did he write?
I don't know. Hundreds, I suppose. But I was delighted to, after he died, you know, find this little notebook with, it was one of those steno books. He had so many haikus in it. And I asked my sister-in-law to translate them for me. And so that's what you have in my book. I chose one for each chapter, 17 chapters. Well, they're not all haikus. Some of them are just, you know, maybe a tanka, which is another form of poetry.
The haiku has a very strict structure, as you mentioned, 5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllables.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make it hard to write, or is that liberating? Does it somehow make it easier to write because it's got the short and very stable structure?
That's well expressed. Liberating to write it, right. Uh-huh. It sees to the very core of whatever nature you're looking at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My guest is Kiyo Sato. She was born in Sacramento, and she's written the story of her family's search for the American dream. The book's called Dandelion Through the Crack. I'd like to hear you read from the book. This is from the very beginning of the book, and it says at the top of the page, May 17th, 1942, Sacramento, California. So this, of course, is happening during World War II.
Yes.
And let's hear how the book starts.
With a start, I notice a police car following me. As I glance in my rearview mirror, peering through the pile of old suitcases in the back seat, I quickly figure I must be at least 3 miles outside of my legal 5-mile radius. My hands begin to sweat. Will the cops take me to jail? What will they do with the suitcases? My brothers and sisters need them to pack up for the trip. If I don't get home by curfew time, what will Mama and Tochan, which means Daddy in Japanese, do? At 18, I am the oldest and the only one who drives besides Tochan. My brother Seiji is close to my age, but he volunteered for the U.S. Army after the Pearl Harbor attack and is stationed at Fort Leonard Wood. What if the police think I'm a spy? Mr. Saiki, our neighbor, flashes through my mind. He is in prison somewhere, and his family doesn't know where he was taken. People say there is a special prison in Missoula, Montana, for spies. His son Mickey quit school to take over the farm. FBI agents showed up at a farm and not finding Mr. Mizukami at home, agents went to Elk Grove High School and demanded that his son tell them the whereabouts of his father. They found Mr. Mizukami pruning pear trees in Cortland and took him in. The next morning, much to the embarrassment of his family, their father's picture appeared in the Sacramento Bee, branded as a spy. If the FBI thinks a good man like Mr. Saiki is a spy, there is no telling what they will do to me. If I were to be picked up now, what would my family do? Would my parents be notified? I must write down somewhere that my name is Kiyo Sato and that my parents are Shinji and Tomomi Sato on Route 2, Box 2917 in Sacramento, California. What will they do with my Studebaker? Dear God, please, please, not now.
That's Kiyo Sato reading from her memoir about her family, the Sato family, and the book is called Dandelion Through the Crack. Your family spent a long time interned. What did you and your family think about that? Were you angry? Were you scared? Did you just not understand why this was happening to you?
You know, I think one of the times that really I shall not forget is when we were taken away. You know, we were to board the train at Perkins, which is right nearby here. Perkins on the railroad tracks, an old, old train. And I thought until the very last minute that this wasn't going to happen. You know, this was wrong. It was unconstitutional. I thought the president certainly should know better. And I hope that somebody will come with a telegram saying, you can all go back to your homes. And when the train started moving, that's when I guess my whole world fell apart. And I thought, well, nobody was helping us. You know, you felt just totally alone. Your friends weren't talking with you anymore. Your classmates, your non-Nisei classmates, and your churches were out there someplace where I don't know, not helping. And your politicians were using you, you know, as their political thing. Then your own president banishes you. You have no place to go, no place. And it's a lonely, lonely feeling.
So it sounds like it was scary before you were taken away.
Very scary, yes.
I don't want to say that being in the internment camp was a good thing. But did you feel more secure in the internment camp than you did back at home?
You know, that's it. Once you were inside the internment camps, once you had those guard towers guarding you and you were, I suppose the outside world thought you were safely incarcerated, we were free to do what we thought we needed to do. And this is where I was so impressed with our parents. And this is probably why I did really write this, one of the reasons why I wrote this book, that it's how our parents never lost sight of what was important. And what was important was the children. My mother used to say, children need to grow up safe, secure, and happy. And we tried to do that, even inside the camps.
And where were you during the war? Where was the camp?
This was Pinedale Assembly Center near Fresno. And it was a temporary camp because the permanent concentration camps weren't ready. So we stayed there for 2.5 months.
Now, when the war was over, you were freed from the internment camps. And then, of course, life was still rather uncertain because mm-hmm. who knew what was going to happen when you went back to home. And there's a memorable passage from your book where you talk about your return. And I'd like to hear that, mm-hmm. please.
Thank you. This comes from a chapter, Bittersweet Journey. I awaken as the train slowly climbs the wintry, dreary side of the Sierra Nevada mountains. We finally hit the summit and descend into California. I want to yell to the whole world, I am home. Green grass covers the meadows surrounded by pine trees. Will the ume, the Japanese flowering plum tree in our front yard, be in bloom? It usually blooms in January, the first to herald the promise of spring. Then it's the Chinese flowering quince in the corner of our yard and mama's daffodils everywhere. Soon the whole vineyard will be a mass of yellow with wild mustard flowers. I shall pick the mustard greens like mama did every spring and cook up a feast for the family along with tempura of carrots and broccoli and prawns and sweet potatoes. I will plan a welcome home party. The aroma will fill our kitchen and there will be happy chatter and story times after supper again. I should first check in with Bill and find out the status of the farm. But something tells me maybe I shouldn't. Why did the power bills come to my father in Poston Camp too, when he was supposed to be taking care of things? The electricity is probably cut off, which means I will have to call the Pacific Gas and Electric Company from Mill Station. That's the first thing I'll have to do. No electricity, no water, no cooking, no nothing. At least I'll have a roof over my head. If it's cold, I can sleep in my clothes, in my jacket, and cover up with my post-government-issue green wool blanket. Will Molly and Dickie come running down the road wagging their tails? Has some kind person fed them and cared for them? Dear God, I mouth and cross my fingers, please let them be there.
That's Kiyo Sato reading from her memoir, Dandelion Through the Crack. It tells the story of her family's search for the American dream in California. And that tells the story of her return to California after returning home after being freed from the internment camps. A little after that, you meet this young woman who's living in your home.
Yes.
That must have been quite a shocking experience.
Yes, totally. I certainly didn't expect that. I thought no matter what condition I faced, that there would be the house that I could stay in and clean up and get ready for the family. But the dogs didn't, of course, come to greet me, and that was one thing. I knocked on the door. No, I didn't. I opened the screen door, and the screen door sort of flapped over me, and I heard voices, and that's when my heart just sank. I thought, oh no, now what am I going to do? So I knocked on the door, and here was this young, sort of tired-looking mother and all her children. And I had to let them know that we were coming back and we would like for her to find another place to live.
But some Japanese-American families didn't manage to move back to their home, did they?
Exactly. Our neighbors, the Yamasakis, lost their whole 20 acres and the vineyard, everything on the farm. The Toguchis didn't come back. So many farmers could not come back. I mean, they lost everything except the clothes that we were allowed to take, which was two handbags and a bedroll.
It was the federal government that took you and your family from your home and forced you to spend the rest of the war in an internment camp. But after the war, you joined the U.S. Air Force. Why did you join the U.S. Air Force?
Well, I suppose it was one way that we could prove that we were good, loyal American citizens. Now, my brother volunteered, as I've said. He was gone. Eventually, my five brothers and I all served in the military in one way or another. So I might tell you that I volunteered while I was in college because the schools of nursing were not taking me. I got answers like, we can't have anyone of Japanese ancestry around the patients. But anyway, I volunteered when the Navy recruiter came on campus, and he took one look at me, and he knew that I, you know, the Navy wasn't taking anyone of my color. So I had to give up on that. And so I volunteered again after I had become a nurse and for the Air Force. And that was during the Korean conflict.
And finally, Keo, later in life, once you were established as a nurse, you invented something called the Blackbird Vision Screening System, which detects eye problems in young children.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think you'd become an inventor when you were younger?
No, of course not. No, that came out of my frustrations as a school nurse. My job was to test the hearing and vision of 3- and 4-year-olds. And how do you do that? You know, I used everything I couldn't find on the market. Nothing worked well. And so what I did was just invent my own method. And this is now called the Blackbird Vision Screening System. In fact, this afternoon, just as I was coming here, I got a call from North Carolina saying, we need 8 more packs of those occluders, you know.
And with this system, the children have to watch the direction that a blackbird is flying. And,
exactly.
And that's how you can gauge the mm-hmm. how good their vision is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Keo, it's been a real pleasure meeting you and talking with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was author and inventor Keo Sato speaking on Insight last August. She appears at the Sacramento International Film Festival on March 29th to answer questions after the showing of the film Passing Poston. It tells the story of the internment camp where Sato and her family and many other Japanese Americans spent much of World War II. And that's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. For more information about the guests and topics you hear on Insight, go to our webpage, capradio.org/insight. Coming up on KXJZ, Dubai is well known for the architectural marvels that dot its skyline, but a neighbor is developing its landscape a different way. That story and the rest of the day's business news next on Marketplace. Today's associate producers were Jason Treadway and Andrew Frischman. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Today's engineer was John Bernaysi. And thank you for joining us.